This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. It was on November 11th, 1919, that the 28th American president, Woodrow Wilson, issued a message to our countrymen on the first Armistice Day, in which he expressed for what he felt the day meant to Americans. This was in the aftermath of World War I. And Veterans Day, which is today, is distinct from Memorial Day, when we honor those who died in service. Veterans Day honors those who served and were honorably discharged. And it was changed from Armistice Day to Veterans Day in the year of 1954, when Dwight David Eisenhower was the president, number 34 on the honor roll of U.S. presidents. 877-217-5757 is your number, and talk@talklouisiana.org is our email address. Phones are working today, and we're joined by Troy Broussard from AARP, and that organization, of course, has many veterans who served with distinction, and Troy is a young man, but he is a representative of AARP, and he, too, served our country and served in war zones. And good morning to you, Troy Broussard.
Good morning, Jim. It's an honor and a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, tell us about your background, Troy.
Sure, absolutely, Jim. I'm a Louisiana native. Grew up in the tiny town of Arnoville, Louisiana, and currently live here in the Baton Rouge area. And, getting close to right out of high school, I joined the Army National Guard. And shortly right after joining, we got activated for Desert Storm. And, I wanted to serve our country. It's an honor to do so. And then now, all of these years later, here I am working with a great organization like AARP. And here we are celebrating veterans and all their accomplishments and saluting them as they should. So I'm very fortunate to have served this country and now working with AARP to make sure we celebrate those veterans and their families.
And Desert Storm, hard to believe, was a few years ago.
Desert Storm, hard to believe, was back in 1990. Okay. So now 1991. So right at or around 30 years to the end of it. And, it seems like yesterday for me. Okay, Jim?
So. Well, Troy is Associate State Director of Advocacy and Outreach for AARP. And to be a member of AARP, do you have to be 50 years old?
At this moment here, it is 50 and over. But you can join as early as in your mid-40s, like 45 years old. So, it's great. And, what we're doing for veterans this month, we are... Veterans and active military can save up to 30% on the yearly AARP membership, which is currently at $16 per year for you and a significant other. So it's something that we're doing, that we promote each May and November of each year, that our veterans can take advantage of those discounts, which is fantastic.
Are you 50 yet?
Oh, look, I am. Listen, don't let the, Jim, do not let the voice nor my haircut, you can't see me, the haircut or the shave fool you. Yes, I am currently 52 years old, proud of it. And like I mentioned, cannot believe it. It's been 30 years since the end of, the Desert Storm. So it was an unbelievable time in my life that I've enjoyed, and to see it come full circle now working with AARP, supporting our veterans. And, we have a couple of great events that we are, free events that we are sharing and letting our veterans and their military families know about here in Louisiana as well.
Well, there are 304,271 military veterans and active duty service members in the state of Louisiana. In a state with 4.8 million people, we're talking about a sizable number of people. In fact, if you were to put them all in one town, it might, I tell you, it'd be one of the biggest towns or cities in Louisiana. But Troy Broussard, you're talking about some events. This veteran of the Louisiana Army National Guard, 2nd Battalion, 156th Infantry Brigade Company, combat team, served 6 years at unit level communications maintainer. What are some of the events coming?
Absolutely, Jim. We have two wonderful events that is actually happening today. The first one is, and both of them are like virtual or on the telephone. So we have the Veterans Day commemorative ceremony at the World War II Museum today, where we're honoring veterans. It starts at 11 a.m., and it's a virtual presentation. And then all of these events that we're talking about today can be found on our website at www.arp.org/LA, and those are free to register. And then so that starts at 11 a.m., but even earlier at 10 a.m. in the next 45 minutes, we're having a wonderful holiday and veteran fraud telephone town hall with our very own Attorney General Jeff Landry. We're going to be talking about those holiday scams and those specific scams that target veterans as well. That starts at 10 a.m. And if you go to our website, you can get a dial-in number to listen in. And the phone lines open at 9:55, and you can call in and ask specific questions, you know, about scams that are impacting you during the holidays and veterans as well, too. So very excited about that, Jim.
Well, you noted that veterans are often victims of scams. They're nearly 40% more likely to lose money to scams because they're targeted. And I think the statistics verify that about 80% of military veterans are targeted by scams related to their military service or the benefits they receive. You're offering some support on trying to avoid being manipulated and used and abused. What can be done?
Absolutely. I think the first thing that we would share with everyone is to make sure that I always provide three great tips. The first tip is to do not make any rash decisions. Okay. I think the key thing is these scammers want to put you in a state of accelerated, intense moments to where you can make these unruly decisions. Learn a script, learn a no script. Learn the words no and said, no, I'm not going to accept this at this time, and hang up the phone or what have you. And then lastly, I think the key thing is to make sure that you report these scams. And, you know, we have a free helpline that you can dial 1-8. It's called the AARP Fraud Watch Network hotline. And it's at 1-877-908-3360. And you can call and speak to a volunteer who will hear your scam, listen to you, and then most importantly, Jim, share it, share that particular scam to make sure that it doesn't happen to anyone else throughout the United States. So, yes, it's disgustful that these scams happen, but I want us to look at these, the scammers are the real issues, and the people that are being victimized, you know, they are not being duped or anything or scammed. They're being victimized, and we're trying to put resources in front of these individuals so that they can be on the lookout for these scammers. So
what is the number again?
Oh, sure. Okay. It's 1-877-908-3360. And this is our AARP Fraud Watch Network, and individuals can call that number and they can report scams that they were almost victim to, so that we can take those scams and make sure that we share it throughout, you know, all of our members throughout the United States to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Do you have a message as a young veteran of war? you know, some of these World War II people are still with us. Johnny yes. Jones is over 100 now. He was a D-Day.
That's right.
What's your message to men and women who have served our country in uniform, you know, and in danger?
Sure. You know, I think the first message that I would share, Jim, is that number one is I want to, you know, salute and thank them for paving the way for someone like myself from a small rural town in Louisiana that was provided an opportunity because of their efforts, you know, their volunteer efforts, and in some cases not volunteer, you know, to go and fight these wars, so I could go ahead and serve my country and do the same. So I just want to salute them. And I just hope that as we look at Veterans Day today, and it's a very important day, I think it's critically important that we all stay focused. And how can we help veterans protect them as they have protected us in the past? So I just want to salute them and thank them for providing me with this opportunity. But please thank a veteran today. Go out of your way to do that. To all the listeners that are out there, make sure you do that. And, you know, just support them in every way that we can.
Well, thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to talk with you, and congrats for Your work with AARP and your service to our country is commended. Thank you, Troy Broussard.
Have a great day, Jim, and thank you for having me on today. It was a pleasure.
Our pleasure. It was on this date 24 years ago that Rod Milburn died. Now, those of us of a certain age know who he was, and I would hope everybody in Baton Rouge would remember this man, and perhaps there should be a street named in his honor that would run through the heart of town. He dominated the 110-meter hurdles in his day, tying or breaking the world record five times. 1971, as a sophomore at Southern University, burst on the national and world stage. He won the Olympics in 1972 at Munich, the Olympics that was clouded by tragedy. And he lived here in Baton Rouge from Opelousas, and he died tragically working at a chemical plant, and he fell into a vat 24 years ago today. George. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number, and we're on deck is George Bell, one of the most prominent men about town, president, CEO of the Capital Area United Way, a Thibodaux native, 1981 Hall of Fame graduate of Nicholls State University, and he is old enough to remember Rodney Milburn. And I mentioned Rod Milburn. I didn't want to cut him short in my remembrance of him as we hit the break, but he won the gold medal at the 72 Olympics, 110-meter hurdles, found dead in a rail car full of caustic chemicals at Georgia Pacific in 1997 on this date, 24 years ago. There was no indication of how Rod Milburn wound up in the chemical solution. Authorities say they did not suspect any foul play. He'd been assigned to unload the rail car, which contained liquid sodium chlorate, a chemical used in the bleaching process of paper. And what a tragic, tragic end for Rod Milburn, who went undefeated and won 27 consecutive amateur finals in his prime, won the gold medal 13.24 seconds, a record that was not broken for 5 years. And, of course, he shared the stage with Willie Davenport, also a gold medalist before him, and they competed against each other in 1972. Willie Davenport, also of Southern University. Milburn won the James J. Corbett Award, Outstanding Male Athlete for the state, in 1971 when he was 21 years old. If he were alive, I'm sure he would be hale and hearty at the age of 70, but it did not happen. And a man of his stature who did so much. And today, by the way, he would not be working at a chemical plant at age 47. He would be signing autographs and endorsing products and living a life of leisure. He would not be doing what he did. And ultimately that job, which was a admirable job and a noble job, cost him his life. 47 years old. With us is George Bell. George, before we go to the topic at hand, I'm sure you remember Rod Milburn.
Jim, I sure do. And can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, great. I'm on the road here off of I-10. But yes, I do. And I was probably an early teenager at the time, but I do remember him. My father graduated from Southern University, so he was a proud Southernite. And anything and anyone related to or tied to Southern, he was all over. So I do remember that name.
Well, George Bell, you are a man who follows our community with earnest, and the idea of the Capital Area United Way is to help businesses and people and workers and everybody at large in our community. And we have a measure on the ballot Saturday that has not received the attention it did 9.5 years ago when it was on the ballot in 2012. It is a renewal of a tax, and who knows how it will go. Unfortunately, turnout is likely to be low, but I see Together to Baton Rouge has just endorsed it. No surprise there. But your thoughts about what you feel is the importance of the tax to preserve and maintain our bus system?
Well, Jim, I'm happy to speak to that, but more importantly, I want to speak to the importance of a part of our community, a segment of our community that we've referred to as ALICE. And those are those folks that are asset limited, income constrained, but employed. And I really became aware of that term when I joined United Way in 2016, over 5 years ago. And what I learned was that, you know, the challenges that those individuals that show up to work every day that are really the backbone of organizations, you know, for 16 years I worked for a local hospital, and I'd see these folks that show up every day. They're in positions that are totally essential to the success and the efficient operations of a especially in healthcare, but in other industries. And what I realized even back then was how important transportation was to that population. Not everyone in our community is able to afford and maintain transportation, a car. So what we have is a large part of our workforce that is solely dependent upon credible, reliable public transportation. And so my awareness of this came when I served on a Baton Rouge Transit task force. And like I said, that opened my eyes to the need, and I was able to hear and see it firsthand where I worked. Well, fast forward to when I came to Capital Area United Way, every couple of years, we do what's called community conversations, where we go into the communities and we interview and survey our stakeholders about what are the things that they would like us to address, the things that they feel our community needs. And consistently near the top has been transportation. So I put those two together and I said, wow, this is something that even with the tax that passed and with the improvements that have been made, this is still an issue. This is something that we have to continue to provide. And I think in some ways it's been exacerbated by some of the movement of jobs and business to South Baton Rouge, which is not in close vicinity to where a lot of our Alice employees live.
All right. Well, what will happen if the tax is not renewed?
That's a good question. I mean, on multiple levels, you have individuals who would be impacted by it. I think it would put a burden on an already strained need for workforce. And I think it just sets us back as a community, especially at a time when we're trying to recover.
I like the way you say it's a good question. Guests do that often, George. I wish one time people would say, Jim, that's really a stupid question. But at any rate.
It is. It is a great question.
No.
I know what you mean.
But
that is the question.
I don't think we would call this a full court press. Now, there may be some strategy here, but about, you know, sometimes when you publicize thing, you end up bringing out the naysayers. But this has been a more subdued approach to this election, and I'm sure if this one fails, there will be another one behind it at some point. But you're right. There is a good portion of our society, our community, that relies on this, and if it were to be I'm not talking about totally going away. If it were to be altered, it would be a game changer for others in a way that might not be good for the community at large.
Right. And that's what I'm looking at. I always look at the greater good here, and I see Baton Rouge as a community that has so much potential and has so many assets at our disposal, but we still are. We still struggle at times to connect the dots and make those resources work as efficiently and effectively as they can.
And a listener notes that restaurants right now are already having difficulty hiring people. And many of these people who work in this industry, the hospitality industry, rely on public transportation. So an industry that's already affected could be dramatically impacted more.
Exactly.
So what's your take on whether this will fly come Saturday?
I mean, goodness, I'm not a I don't have that kind of crystal ball, but I do know that when it comes to issues like this and off-cycle elections, whoever can get their base of support out to the polls is probably going to win. And my concern here is that the people that truly rely on this may not always be as aware or as passionate about the issue until after, you know, after it goes away. But I just think it's the kind of thing that we, you know, any of us community stakeholders who really are concerned about making sure that we are able to continue to provide access. And look, it's not perfect. So
we need to take a short pause. We'll return and spend a few more minutes with George Bell after the break, President, CEO, Capital Area United Way. And then we hear from the intrepid Mark Ballard. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and we are wrapping it up with George Bell, President, CEO of the United Way, Capital Area United Way, and we will hopefully have him back soon to talk about matters of importance to our community. But there is an important matter on the ballot Saturday, and there are people of good intention who believe this CATS tax should not be renewed. And it is a sizable investment from the community. If you own a $100,000 home, you pay about $100 a year. If you own a $1 million home, you pay about $1,000 a year. So it's a sizable investment, and some people say, hey, I don't use a bus system. I don't need it. I don't see a lot of people on the buses where I am, so why should I vote to renew? George, you hear that, so how do you answer the naysayers?
Well, again, I look at the total community, Jim, and I look at the where the needs are, and I also look at that population, again, the Alice population, those folks that are working, that we rely on to show up at work, and to disrupt a service that is meeting that need at this critical time in our business community's reboot, so to speak, I think it would be just a bad thing to happen. So I'm looking at it more from that standpoint. I just impress upon folks that you know, we have to look at that picture. And the other thing is that the businesses that rely on these employees, I mean, we're talking about health sector, we're talking about hospitality, we're talking about any of those businesses that are in remote locations where, and I say remote from where the population and the ridership lives, that's where we have to look. And we have to look at how can we improve this service that's being provided. And I think that is something that we may need to you know, put our attention to.
All right. Thank you, George Bell. Appreciate you. Let's talk soon, and be safe. Obviously, you're on the roads, and as we know, that's dangerous out there. A lot of drag racing going on. Let's talk more very soon. Thank you, George. And Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for the Advocate/Picayune, is with us, as he is on most Thursdays, 877-217-5757, if you would like to talk with Mark. And we want to cover some ground with him. Something that we've not really reflected on much this week, but President Biden last week hailed Congress when Saturday there was final passage of a $1 trillion infrastructure package. Now, there's another one coming behind this, but he called it a monumental step forward for the nation. And when you look at the goodies in this, many of them go to Louisiana. We get a disproportionate number of the goodies based on our population. The U.S. House vote was 228-206. And Mark, in our delegation, only one member voted for it. Troy Carter voted yes. The Democrat and the Republicans all said no to a plan that obviously would contribute a lot to Louisiana. Saying no to this plan, Garrett Graves, Steve Scalise, Clay Higgins, Julia Letlow, Mike Johnson. What do you make of this, Mark Ballard?
Well, they all have reasoning behind it. You know, it's too expensive. It doesn't direct enough funding to Louisiana. It's not helpful. And I think the real reason is behind it is that it's basically the Republicans didn't want to give Joe Biden a win. That seems to be borne up in the fact that the 13 Republicans who did support the infrastructure bill are getting just pilloried by their own members for having, you know, become a traitor. And that's a word that they use quite a bit, and voting for the bill.
Well, I'm just looking at some of the goodies in it, and $808 million for Mississippi rivers and tributaries, $251 million for flood and coastal emergencies, $53 million to support local restoration projects for Lake Pontchartrain, $17 billion for the Army Corps of Engineer infrastructure priorities, including $2.5 billion for construction of capital coastal storm risk management, hurricane and storm damage reduction projects, and go on and on and on. There are all kinds of goodies for Louisiana, and you have noted this, that on a proportionate basis, a state with 1.4% of the national population, Louisiana would stand to get far more than 1.4% of the goodies in this $1 trillion plan.
Yes, indeed. And a large part of that comes because Senator Bill Cassidy, a Republican, and he was pillared for it as well, was in the negotiations. And so a lot of what Louisiana is, a lot of how that money is going to be dispersed is going to be done by formula on the federal level. And he was able to kind of fix those formulas so that a lot of it comes to Louisiana, including many of the incentives that are supposed to, build up some of the businesses that operate out of Louisiana.
Well, it is a lot of money. And for those who haven't thought about it, $1 trillion is $1 million. $1 million. That's a lot of money. But Donald Trump had $1 trillion packages that were passed as well. And in the last budget year under Trump, which ended the last full budget year, September 30th of a year ago, there was a record $3.1 trillion deficit for 1 year. Well, the numbers are in for the first year of the Biden presidency, and they're bad too. But at $2.8 trillion, Joe Biden actually reduced the deficit. And guess what? Next year, it's projected to go down to $1.15 trillion. So once again, we have a Democrat who is reducing deficits as Clinton did, as Obama did, and now as Biden is doing. Henry at the Country Club, you're on with Mark Ballard. Good morning, Henry.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Mark. I hope y'all enjoying this rainy day out here today. I got a proposal. Now, Mr. Jim, I don't think you've ever really had a contest for your listeners, and I want to propose one. Why don't we see if we can all enter our guess and see which one of these Republicans shows up at the most groundbreakings and ribbon cuttings for these projects?
Well, you know that will happen.
That could be a good drinking game, huh?
Yeah, you know that will happen. No doubt about it. They'll take credit for it.
They'll be there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. 877.
They're politicians.
They are. And Democrats are not averse to doing that as well. But 877-217-5757 if you'd like to talk with Mark Ballard of The Advocate. And Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you are on the air with Mark. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mark. My question is, how are things going in North Louisiana right now? It feels like our state had like three zones of influence, and also that budget, that spread over 10 years. So that $1 trillion you're talking about, that's not 1 year. It's spread over 10 years. So,
it's not one lump sum, but it's still a lot of money, even by federal budget standards. And one thing I did note as I was, actually, as Robert Travis Scott gave me a copy of The Economist on a plane we were on a couple of weeks ago, and there was a good story in there. You know, countries all over the world are running deficits. It's not just the United States. We're all spending like there's no tomorrow, Mark. In Louisiana, the budget is, by constitution, required to be balanced. Should we have that in Washington as well? We've talked, the nation has talked about that in the past. Couldn't happen overnight. It would be disastrous if it did. But is that something long-term that might be a good objective?
Well, you know, not being an economist and so, but I have read a good deal about there is a battery of economists out there who think that deficit spending on a federal level, maybe not on the state level, but on a federal level, might be a good thing because it kind of incentivizes, it pushes the economy in a way that what we do on the state level does not. So there is an argument for keeping the deficits. The idea of being in debt kind of scares me, but but then I'm not a big time economist. So
well, there is a school of thought that has changed over the years that deficits aren't as bad as once thought, and when we look at it, most of the country is in debt. Most people don't own their cars, they don't own their houses, they have notes to pay, which means they're in debt. But when the country has as a portion of the budget, more than 20% of it is interest on the debt, then we're getting into a treacherous situation. And I don't mind these bean counters if they are consistent. But as we have seen quite often, Republicans in particular, they only start counting the beans when it's a Democrat who's proposing something. There was no talk about what would happen to the debt and the deficit when Donald Trump had a trillion-dollar plan. And when George Bush had a trillion-dollar plan.
No, there wasn't. There wasn't. But that, again, goes back to it being politics. And the politics of it is, you know, it doesn't matter what your guy does. You know, he's wrong. You know, so
there you go.
The other side is wrong. So.
Well, today, the top story in the Advocate: state seeks takeover of failing insurers, two firms facing insolvency due to Hurricane Ida losses. And then your column in Sunday's paper, Mark, was hatred of insurance companies becoming bipartisan issue. What's going on here?
Well, it's the insurance industry is having a tough row right now in Louisiana. And a large part of it comes back from, you remember, the tort reform, which they kind of the insurance industry kind of patterned as it's going to bring down auto insurance rates, you know, so that they could get around the sort of complex, complicated and kind of boring for people who don't know about it tort reform arguments. Well, the rates haven't come down. And then top on that is we ran into the issues about these homeowners policies when Ida came ashore that, you know, was supposed to give emergency money, but only if there was an evacuation. And some of the parishes felt like that storm got.
All right. We do have to take a break. We'll return more with Mark Ballard of the Advocate. 877-217-5757, your number. Back after this 2-minute pause. This is Jim Inkster, rounding the corner, heading from home for home, and Mark Ballard is with us. Your number, if you'd like to get in, is 877-217-5757. Emails talk@talklouisiana.org. As we were going to the break, Mark was expounding about the insurance industry, and you note in your column, Mark, that in Lake Charles, State Senate, the race to replace Ronnie Johns, the insurance agent who became chair of the Gaming Control Board earlier this year. The industry has donated $8 million to recent legislative and statewide campaigns, and this is a huge issue, as you can imagine, based on what's happened in Lake Charles. So this could be a harbinger of issues in the next few years as we approach the 2023 election cycle.
A lot of people are thinking so. It's a bipartisan issue, and right now it's boiling down to who hates the insurance companies more. Perhaps in a year or so it'll become, you know, do we throw the whole thing out versus what kind of a reform are we going to do?
Well, I've had a listener chide me for not talking about this with you before, and I don't know if we have or not, but it is a sordid story about Jack Strain, one of the state's most powerful elected officials, as sheriff of St. Tammany Parish for 20 years, first cousin of the agriculture commissioner, Mike Strain. He'll spend presumably the rest of his life in prison after a jury of six men, six women convicted him Monday night on charges of crimes against boys, eight of them, including four counts of aggravated rape. And Mark, this is a man who led a parish that is the most affluent in the state, probably the most educated, and yet they fell for a guy who turned out to be much less than he was presented. He turned out to be an evil person in the realm of one Scott Rogers. How does this happen?
Well, I guess we need to know that the Strain family has been a power player in St. Tammany Parish for, you know, nearly 100 years, not unlike the Edwards family is in Tangipahoa Parish. So there is a kind of a comfort level in voting for someone with Strain as their last name. And I think a large part of this happens because we don't watch them close enough once they get elected. And I think that's an issue, you know, all over. I mean, that we just accept what they say and don't question it too closely. And that seems to have been the case here.
877-217-5757. And in a federal probe, as the advocate has reported, authorities charged and received guilty pleas from two ranking sheriff's officials in Strain's inner circle. And both men say they schemed with Strain to privatize a work release program previously run by the sheriff's office and turn it over to a company in which money was kicked back to Sheriff Strain. So there are financial allegations in addition to the conviction on 8 counts, including 4 counts of aggravated rape. And we're talking about little boys that were preyed upon by St. Tammany Sheriff Jack Strain. So this guy, 5 times elected sheriff of the state's most affluent, most educated parish, most conservative parish. And yet the people of St. Tammany Parish obviously didn't know this, or they would not have elected him. But I just don't know how people can keep a life like this under wraps for so long. And fortunately, he was exposed for the evil person he is.
Or has been convicted of. One issue, the scandal over the contract, I think, is what started this whole thing to begin with. And once they started looking into that, then these other issues came up as well, or at least came to the forefront.
And we had John Schroeder on the show, the state treasurer, who's from the same neck of the woods and, of course, is from the same party and rubbed shoulders politically with Jack Strain. But he said he's known him since he was 27 years old and had no idea that this was going on. And I suspect that's true of just about everybody except those who were victimized. And as sordid as it is, thank God it became known to the public at large. Now, we have an election this Saturday in the state, and Mark, turnout is not expected to be so great.
That's what I'm being told. They're looking 15-16%, and they're going to those very few people in the state out of 3 million registered voters, those very few people are going to be choosing or at least deciding an issue that could revamp the way Louisiana levies taxes and collects taxes.
And
it'll be a few hours.
Yeah, it is an important amendment, number 2. And as you know, the Constitution's been amended more than 200 times. And turnout in New Orleans is going to be high because of higher, not necessarily way high, but higher than the rest of the state because of a mayor's election in which Latoya Cantrell may very well end up in a runoff, but she is expected to retain her seat. But that factor makes this really interesting regarding these amendments, because Orleans Parish will have an inordinate proportion of the vote.
They will be. They will have a higher vote. When you say high, I mean, I guess, you know, our definitions get really skewed in this election world. But they're only looking at, you know, 33%, 34%, 35%, which, considering that New Orleans is choosing a mayor and a sheriff and all of its major leaders and its entire city council, I would argue is not that high. But also the other thing is that New Orleans will have an impact on it because of the low turnout for the rest of the state. Their low turnout and the number of votes are may, you know, on the edges help it one way or the other, but it'll be but I don't think it's going to overwhelm the 15% for the rest of the state.
And we have the same amendments on the ballot here in Baton Rouge, and one of those in addition to that in Baton Rouge is the tax to retain the funding for the bus system. Martha writes about the CATS tax. What about the environmental aspect? Moving persons by mass transportation lessens the numbers of polluting cars on the road. Another important reason to improve mass transit in Baton Rouge and around the country. And as we noted, I think last week, some of these vehicles now are electric vehicles. But these buses, of course, put out big fumes. But nonetheless, Martha's right, when you have 40 people on one bus, that's better than having 40 people in 20 or 25 cars.
Yeah, absolutely. But what undermines her argument is that very few people in this city ride the bus. And, that is an issue. I mean, the bus system is not like it is in other cities in that it is widely used. This is primarily used by people who are our workforce, you know, who are going to and fro work, and but not by the more well-to-do who drive usually all by themselves in their car.
Well, I sought to have people from CATS on this show to talk about this and did not receive a positive reply. And for the life of me, I can't understand why they wouldn't come on to talk about the benefits of the bus system. But there has been controversy regarding CATS that turned some people off as well, Mark.
I think that, yes, the controversy surrounding the management and the administration of CATS is not going to help what this is a necessary funding for our bus system in our city. And I think that it's going to hurt it all in all, particularly when you're looking at what you also hear a lot, the buses driving through our neighborhood is, oh, they're always empty. Well, that may be true, but if you went to North Baton Rouge, they're always full, you know, and we just don't go to North Baton Rouge that much. So I think it's going to have a tough road to hoe, you know, on Saturday.
Well, it is going to be interesting to see what happens, because if it doesn't pass, I'm sure there will be a renewed effort. But in the interim, it creates a huge budget hole, and who knows if it'll ever pass. If it doesn't pass the first time, it'll probably be put on a ballot that is more crowded, and meaning heavier turnout. But we don't really have a heavy turnout election coming anytime soon that we can predict. Next year, there'll be a U.S. Senate race and congressional elections, but we won't have the kind of turnout we have for gubernatorial elections and presidential elections, Mark.
Well, yeah, not until 2023 when we choose a new governor. We should be seeing our numbers get above 50%, you know.
I have an email here from Richard Lipsy, and I surmise that he sent this to more than people than just me, but he's touting Amendment 2, saying it'll lower Louisiana's income tax rate to the lowest in the Southeast, saying we believe you deserve that. It'll create jobs and opportunity. That's another one that, you know, all the good government groups are in favor of it, except for the Louisiana Budget Project. But once again, in a low turnout election, it's far from a slam dunk.
Well, also the Power Coalition is against it as well. And their arguments against it is that it's going to basically set in stone a tax system that relies on sales taxes, which are disproportionately carried by low-income people.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Mr. Lipsy, who sent me the same thing, and we should not forget, is that also the Constitutional Amendment Number 1 is aimed at least starting the ball rolling, creating a commission, and to collect sales taxes. And right now they're collected locally. And if you're a business operating in more than one parish, you have to fill out more than one of these sales tax reports. And this would make it a single thing. Fill it out one time, send in your money, and don't worry about it.
Well, Mark Ballard, thank you. Let's catch up again next Thursday. Always good to catch up with this man who follows Louisiana as close as anybody in the business. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for Talk Louisiana. Until tomorrow, stay safe and stay tuned.